Hello, everyone, and happy Sunday evening. And we are here for the Seven Steps to Awakening. We'll be looking at quote 781. We started looking at it last week. We did 781A. So tonight we'll begin with 781B. But first I'm going to play what I think is a happy song. you all probably all know this song. It's called Singing in the Rain. Wait a second, I don't hear anything. Let me stop it. Maybe my plugs aren't plugged in good enough. Let me stop it, push some things. See if we push some buttons. I don't know. Everything looks plugged in. Speaker is on. Let's try this again. See what happens, okay? Huh. How bizarre. Maybe I'll have to sing it. I'm singing in the rain, just singing in the rain. What a glorious feeling. I'm happy again. What's the next line? Does anybody know? I don't know why my music's not playing. It played this morning just fine. But right now, it seems not interested in playing. So, goodness. Let me unplug my speakers and try playing it just through my laptop. But at least we'll be able to figure out if it's a laptop problem or a speaker problem. Here we go again. Or an iTunes problem. Let's just try another song real quick. Here's Don't Rain on My Parade. We still got rain going on here. Huh. Bizarre. Okay, well, no song, and I'll have to figure out later what's going on. Oh, well. So I guess that means you guys can hear me, right? I assume by now you would have told me if you didn't. Okay. So, since we have no idea what's going on with my music, what we'll do is just jump right into the seven steps to awakening. So I'm going to re-quote 781. Again, this quote may sound familiar because we started it last week. And tonight we're going to continue it. In fact, let me give you a link for those of you who like to follow along in the journal. I'll give you a link to 781B, which is the first journal entry that we will look at tonight. There you go. All right, so 781 says, when free from the grasp of selfish personality, he reaches his real nature. Bliss and being shine forth by their own light. Again, when free from the grasp of selfish personality, he reaches his real nature. Bliss and being shine forth by their own light. And so I'm just going to go straight to the journal entry, 781B. There is no need to imagine what self-realization is like. Let that remain a mystery until it is tasted. When it is tasted, it will be known. Until then, let go of ego at every opportunity. It is the ego that hides the self. So, I'm sure I've probably mentioned this before, but from, you know, fairly early on the spiritual path, I was guided from within to follow what was called for me the middle way. And this is not the same middle way as Buddha. In fact, I wasn't familiar with Buddha's story yet. So this was the middle way as it was defined for Regina Don Acres. But the middle way, as it was defined for me, was the path of awakening really has two primary sides to it, and it's doing both of them. One side is embracing the light. And, of course, we practice that through awareness, watching awareness meditation, or loving consciousness meditation, embracing the light. But the other side is letting go of the ego. Letting go of everything in me that I recognize as the ego. And I just want to say, letting go of everything in me that I recognize as the ego. And the list of things that I let go of on a daily basis are so long, I could never begin to list them all. And no one would ever be able to look at me and discern the amount of letting go that is occurring on a daily basis. You know, let's assume someone snaps at me with a firm tone. But then the ego in me is going to want to respond equally, right? And so I let that go. Let's assume there's something that I've put a lot of work into. And then someone else wants to take it over. And the thought in me is something like, you know, what if they, you know, what if they make it look tacky? What if they don't do it as well as I did? And I let that go immediately and I let them take it over. Let's say, you know, my boyfriend wants to go to car club meetings and car shows, which I have no interest in. The first one or two times was fun, but then after that, you know, just from a selfish personality point of view, no fun at all. I let go of my point of view and I go. Let's say somebody asks for some money and my first thought is, oh, but I need my money for this or this or this. I let go of my objections and I give them the money. I do this all day long every day and it's all silent. It's all quiet. Nobody knows how much I let go. But what a different world this would be if everybody did the same thing. It would truly be a holy place. So, again, the quote that we're looking at says, when free from the grasp of selfish personality, he reaches his real nature. Bliss and being shine forth by their own light. And so letting go of the ego in me every time I recognize it is becoming free of the selfish personality. That's one part of the middle way. Again, it has two parts to it. The middle way is doing both, right? At least this is how it was defined for me, not Buddha's middle way, in case you're coming in since I said this before. The middle way is both letting go of the ego in me every time I see it and embracing the truth. So again, the journal entry says, There is no need to imagine what self-realization is like. Let that remain a mystery until it is tasted. When it is tasted, it will be known. Until then, let go of ego at every opportunity. That's the important part. Let go of ego at every opportunity. It is the ego that hides the self. There have also been a number of times when friends, and you know, I'm just going to give the selfish ego's point of view. Friends that I've done a lot for, right, that's the selfish ego's point of view, suddenly, for one reason or another, decide not to be friends. And they kind of break off the relationship in a formal way. Like one friend, I had given him a rock from Arunachala on one of my trips to India. And in fact, when he broke off the friendship, he literally gave me the rock back. But then what I have seen happen is years later, when these friends find themselves in a really strong ego attack and they don't know where else to turn, they call me. And I'm there for them immediately. You know, the ego would say, wait a minute, you broke up with me, remember? You decided you didn't want to have anything to do with me, remember? But no, 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 no. Because I don't listen to ego. So it's never mentioned. It's never mentioned. I'm just right there, their best friend again. That's our job, is to let go of ego and us. To not think, speak, or act from ego. Our job is to not think, speak, or act from ego. The journal entry says there is no need to imagine what self-realization is like. Let that remain a mystery until it is tasted. When it is tasted, it will be known. Until then, let go of ego at every opportunity. Let go of ego at every opportunity. It is the ego that hides the self. All right, and that's it for 781. So I'm going to move on to 782. Oh, Linda's saying she wishes political leaders would follow that advice. And Jacqueline is saying, yeah, this is what Tess Hughes said. Put the ego on a little diet. Yeah. All right. So I did see a pretty cool commercial. Lynn, when you said that you wish the political leaders would follow that advice, I did see a pretty cool commercial just before coming down here. In fact, I wrote down the website upstairs, so I don't have it with me. But it was all of the past presidents that are currently living, so Democrats and Republicans alike. They have gotten together, and they are collecting money through a nonprofit organization to help the people who were affected by Harvey and Irma, the two recent hurricanes. But it was such a beautiful commercial, you know, because it had, you know, it started with, I think it was Obama was on first. I've only seen the commercial once, but I think Obama was on first. It was kind of funny because, you know, I was only half paying attention. I was working, and it took me a few seconds before I realized, wait a minute, he's not our president, because he was talking like a president about these hurricanes and the damage. I'm like, wait a minute, he's not our president. And just about the time I had that, they switched to, I think it was Jimmy Carter. And then they switch to George W. Bush, I think. And then they switch to Bill Clinton. And George Bush Sr., you know, probably because of his physical condition, he didn't say much. All he did was say, thank you, you know, after the request to donate, thank you. But he was there as well. And it was a beautiful coming together of the political leaders from, you know, what we call both sides, right, joined together in one cause. And I wrote down the website because I thought, oh, yeah, I'll go. I haven't donated yet for Irma and Harvey. I think I've been waiting for what felt like the right plea. And I think that was the one. So I wrote down the website. And if anybody's super interested, I can run upstairs and get it. if not, I'll just continue. So 782. Man's circle of birth and death comes through the fault of attributing reality to the unreal. Man's circle of birth and death comes through the fault of attributing reality to the unreal. But this false attribution is built up by the mind. This is the effective cause of birth and death and sorrow. You know, you guys may have heard me talk about this before, but I don't perceive myself as suffering. In fact, for the last several weeks, I've had an injured back, which is getting better, but it's not well yet. And at certain times, especially at night when I'm in bed, it gets really painful. And I don't know how to say what I'm about to say next, but although, you know, it's clear that the back is really painful. And like if you were there watching me in bed, you'd see me turning over oh so carefully, right? You know, trying to minimize the pain, you know. It's not like I want to stab myself with 1,000 knives. You know, I still want to be very careful and ginger as I roll over so the pain doesn't hurt. But I never have the feeling anymore that I'm suffering, not even from that pain, which can sometimes be intense. I mean, I know the pain is there, and I turn over slowly to minimize the pain. But I suppose I never perceive myself as suffering because the happiness just never goes away. And I don't know how to be happy and suffer at the same time. So my experience is one of happiness rather than one of suffering. And the reason I'm telling you that is because, you know, this talks about man's circle of birth and death as if birth and death, the circle of birth and death, is a horrible thing that everyone wants to escape. And I wouldn't be surprised that if we spontaneously could acquire the knowledge of every lifetime and what it went through, I feel pretty certain that we would discover that most lifetimes have been filled with a lot of suffering. So I guess what I'm saying, just for the sake of being honest, I don't feel any personal ambition to end birth and death. I feel a different personal ambition or aspiration, and that is to know truth. And realizing truth may also end birth and death just because that's the nature of truth realization. But I don't feel right now a need to escape or get away from anything. You know, I've heard people on the spiritual path say, oh, I just want to get out of this world. I just don't want to be born again. And like, I just have never had those feelings. I don't see anything to escape. I'm happy. But I do want to know truth. And if someone were to ask me, why do you want to know truth? I don't think I can even give an answer to the question. Other than to say it's a calling. It's a yearning that was birthed in me. I told the story this morning about how I was inspired by Peace Pilgrim. Right? And so through that inspiration, this yearning was born in me to know truth. But again, the other side of that, the wanting to escape something, it wasn't born. I don't feel a need to escape anything. So this quote then is kind of a funny quote for me to read because listen to the quote again. Man's circle of birth and death comes through the fault of attributing reality to the unreal. But this false attribution is built up by the mind. This is the effective cause of birth and death and sorrow. You know, this seems to be talking to someone who has that desire to escape. Escape suffering, escape the world, you know, escape whatever. But if we take the first line out of the quote, man's circle of birth and death comes through the fault of attributing the reality to the unreal. If we take the first part of that out of this quote and the last part of the quote about the effective cause of birth and death and sorrow, if we take that out of the quote, the middle still interests me completely. Because the middle is still talking about the difference between what is true and what is not true. And again, I have a calling to know what is true. I have a desire to know the truth. So what the middle of this quote is saying is that the mind the mind attributes reality to the unreal. And that matters to me. In fact, that matters a lot. If my calling is to know truth, and the mind is what attributes reality to the unreal, then it's very, very important to me not to believe the chattering of mind. Lynn brought up politicians, so let me just use that as an example. If any of you watch both CNN and Fox News to any degree, then you know the points of view of those two news stations is completely different. And the way CNN will report an event is completely opposite of the way Fox News will report the exact same event. Well, last night I happened to turn on the TV and they had some show on about Ronald Reagan and his presidency. And, you know, that was quite a while ago. I was in college during the first part of the Reagan presidency. But they had little clips about what the news media was saying. I saw the exact same thing there. I mean, all those years ago. It's not, we might blame CNN and Fox now, but all those years ago before CNN or Fox existed, you can see the colored perception of the news media. And what that's an example of to me, a symbol of to me, is the colored perception of the human mind. There's so much falsehood in it. We are unable to look at an event and see it for what it is, see it clearly. We are unable to listen to a person and hear what they are saying because we are so colored, we are so prejudiced, we are so biased by our own mind's mental interpretation. The news media is merely an example of what we all do. And nowadays, they say that some people are becoming, you know, so disgusted with the news media that they're starting to not watch the news anymore. How beautiful it would be if we became so disgusted with our own interpretations, we chose not to listen to them anymore, too. It's the mind that attributes reality to the unreal. It's your mind and my mind that attributes reality to the unreal. Our minds just make up stuff all the time, and we believe it. And so, as someone who has a calling to know truth, I also have a natural desire not to want to believe the liar, the mind. I mean, you can't want to know truth and want to believe the liar at the same time, right? If you really, really, really want to know truth, then you also really, really, really have to want to have disinterest in the liar. But I suppose because of the way this quote is addressing someone, that not everyone has this calling to know truth. That's not the motivation. The motivation isn't a desire to know truth. The motivation is the desire to escape suffering, to escape this world, to escape the cycle of birth and death. It's kind of funny because as I look at that, and of course now I'm looking at it through my own little mind, but as I look at that, I'm not certain that if my desire was to escape, that I would be as eager to not listen to the ego. Because the ego has its own stories about how I can escape, right? Like I can get out of this relationship with this man because that's part of my suffering. I can get out of this job and get a new job because this job is part of my suffering. I can, you know, dot, dot, dot. I can do whatever. You know, the mind is always offering possible solutions to help me escape my unhappiness. So I'm a little concerned. I don't know if concerned is the right word, but I'm a little concerned that if someone's desire is to escape suffering, to escape this world, to escape birth and death, to escape life as they perceive it, that there might not be as much motivation to not listen to the ego as there is if you just want to know truth. Wanting to know truth might be a more motivating motivation, but maybe that's only from my point of view. But it seems to me what this quote is trying to say is, look, if you want to escape suffering, if you want to escape this world, if you want to escape the cycle of birth and death, then you have to understand that the ego is the problem. The ego is what attributes reality to the unreal. And is making that connection so that the motivation to not listen to ego will be born in the one who wants to escape. I'm going to read the quote again, and then I'm going to look and see what I saw in this when I contemplated it a couple of years ago. Man's circle of birth and death comes through the fault of attributing reality to the unreal. But this false attribution is built up by mind. This is the effective cause of birth and death and sorrow. So let's see where I went with this. In May of 2015, 782A, mind is a habit. Attention to mind is a habit. Movement of mind is a habit. There is nothing real or lasting in mind. It is habit in motion. That is all. So at least in this particular journal entry, I did not comment on the escaping the cycle of birth and death. It may not have had any meaning to me then either. But I am focusing in on the part of the quote that is important to me. You know, the fact that mind blocks truth is important to me because I have a heartfelt calling to know truth beyond all doubt as a direct experience, not to believe that something is truth because someone else has told me so, but to know the truth. And so if mind is the obstacle to truth realization, then paying attention to how mind distracts me is very important. So again, this is saying that mind is a habit. What that says to me, if it's a habit, that says I can't do nothing and realize truth. Because mind is the obstacle and mind is a habit. And my experience is it takes effort to overcome a habit. Have you ever tried to let go of any habit at all? It doesn't matter whether it's the habit of smoking cigarettes, drinking alcohol, getting angry, chewing on your fingernails, overeating. What other habits are there? Yeah, chocolate, right? Oh, swearing. Swearing can be a habit. The habit of watching TV. You know, it doesn't really matter what the habit is. We could just sit here and make a list of habits. If you've ever had any kind of a habit that you recognized was not in your best interest, and therefore you decided to let go of that habit, didn't you notice that it took some effort? It's like you're kind of caught in the habit, right? You're caught in it. And if you don't do anything to get outside of the gravity of the habit, you remain caught in it. You know, this is kind of interesting because, as you all know, there's still a popular teaching today about not engaging in spiritual practice, that somehow practicing is an obstacle to truth realization. But if we look at mind as a habit, just like any other habit, it may be easier to see that we actually do need good practices that are going to help us break that habit of listening to mind. So in this journal entry, that's what I'm looking at. Mind is a habit. Attention to mind is a habit, right? Mind starts chattering and attention goes there. That is also a habit. Movement of mind is a habit. Now, there is nothing real or lasting in mind. It is a habit in motion. That is all. But again, the habit needs to be broken. So seeing it as a habit kind of helps us to see that we need to do something. We need to take some kind of action in order to break the habit. And I'm going to move on to 782C. And this, oh, actually 782B. And this is what 782B says. How does one break a habit? Change is necessary. One does not break a habit by remaining dull in the cycle of habit. One must become alert to the cycle of habit, and then through determination, which is love, step outside of, beyond, the ongoing cycle of habit. So what's interesting here is, again, I say that through determination, which is love, one must step outside of, beyond, the ongoing cycle of habit. So let's look at that for a moment. Is determination synonymous with love? I'm guessing. I'm not going to bother. Ah, what the heck. I am going to bother. I'm going to pull up the thesaurus. And I'm going to type in determination. And let's just see if love comes up. Here are the words that come up. Resolution, resolve, willpower, strength of character, single-mindedness, purposefulness, intentness, staunchness, perseverance, persistence, tenacity, staying power, strong-mindedness, backbone, stubbornness, doggedness, I don't know that word, so I'll skip it. Oh, spirit, that's the closest we've got so far. Courage, pluck, grit, stout-heartedness, and then informally, guts, spunk, balls, moxie, and formally, pernacity. Funny. But love is not there. So did I just make this up? Am I making up the meaning of the word determination? When I say determination is love, I'm not making it up. Even though the thesaurus doesn't agree with me. If I recognize that there's a habit that's not in my best interest, let's take smoking as an example. Because most people in America, even those who smoke, recognize that smoking is not in the smoker's best interest, right? So if I recognize that smoking is not in my best interest, if I become determined to quit smoking, and, you know, I use my resolve, my willpower, my strength of character, my single-mindedness, my purposefulness, my intentness, my perseverance, my persistence, my staying power, etc. I pull all that together, which are synonyms with determination, in order to quit smoking. Isn't that also loving myself? Isn't that love? I became determined and I stayed with that determination until I overcame a habit that I knew was not in my best interest. That's love. I did something loving for myself. Well, it's the same thing when we let go of the habit of believing the mind. It may take effort. It may take great effort, determination, resolution, resolve, great willpower, single-mindedness, purposefulness, intentness, perseverance, persistence, staying power. But because it is so much in my best interest to let go of believing the ego, all of that is love. It's kind of like the message in the teachings of Inner Ramana about the love of discipline, right? And it helps to really contemplate these things a little bit because, you know, what the mind wants to say, and this is why I think, this is a personal opinion, but this is why I think so many people are eager to grab on to the teaching that practice is not necessary. Because the mind sees practice and effort and having to, you know, work hard, work consistently, give a lot of time, sees all of that as bad. So it really helps to contemplate that determination is not bad. Determination is not something that's against my will. It's love. I am loving myself when I am determined to let go of believing the ego. And therefore, I practice the practices that are intended for that purpose, such as inquiry, right? Forgiveness. The loving all method, because you can't practice the loving all method if you're believing the ego's judgments. All of the practices that are intended, which do take effort, all of the practices which are intended to help me lose interest in the ego are love. An awareness watching awareness, although awareness watching awareness is the embracing truth side of the coin. In order to practice awareness watching awareness, right, we have to turn our attention away from thought. So there too, we are practicing the same determination. And it's love. Because letting go of the ego is in my best interest. Being determined to break the habit of paying attention to mind and believing mind is in my best interest. Therefore, it is love. So again, the journal entry says, how does one break a habit? Change is necessary. One does not break a habit by remaining dull in the cycle of habit. One must become alert to the cycle of habit, and then through determination, which is love, step outside of, beyond, the ongoing cycle of habit. In other words, stop having interest in the mind. Stop giving attention to the mind. Stop believing the mind's chatter. I'm going to move on to 782C. How does one become alert to the cycle of habit? And this is my suggestion to myself. How does one become alert to the cycle of habit? Keep a journal. Buy a diary with a little lock on it, if you wish. Let that diary symbolize the secrets you have hidden from yourself. And then go in search of those secrets with earnestness, which is love and dedication. Write the secrets as you find them in your diary. Be brief and not long-winded. Do not worry about dates, since the cycle of habit is often repeated. Be absolutely honest, since you can lock the diary and hide the key. And then each night, open the diary with your heart and read the secrets you have written there. How do you keep the cycle of birth and death alive? What are your habits which continuously feed the ego? And I actually did this. I actually did buy a diary with a little lock on it. Not that I had anyone, there's no one in this house that would go and read my journal, but it seemed just to add a bit of fun to it. You know, I got this pink diary with sparkles on it. And then what I did was when I noticed something in my mind that I knew was a part of the cycle of paying attention to ego, like, oh, there's another way that ego gets my attention, right? I wrote it in that diary. You know, for example, one of the things, and I don't have the diary anymore. In fact, I only threw it away like 6 months ago. About 6 months ago or so, I was cleaning out my desk, and I looked at it and felt like I didn't need it anymore, and so I threw it away. If I had it, I'd pull it out and read to you some of the things that I wrote down. But I don't, and if you know my memory, you know I don't remember now. But, you know, let's say that let's say that Ron and Jasmine wanted to watch TV with me. And my mind started saying, you know, Ron and Jasmine are really obstacles to truth. If it wasn't for Ron and Jasmine, I could spend more time, you know, contemplating truth and meditating. And I noticed that's ego. Well, then what I would write in the journal is blaming Ron and Jasmine for... You know, blaming Ron and Jasmine for me not realizing truth. I would just write that in there. That's a part of the cycle, part of the thought cycle that repeats itself, because I would have those thoughts frequently, right? That's a part of the cycle of how the ego gets my attention. When it starts blaming them, you know, because I can't get enough practice time because of them, right? That's ego. And just whenever I noticed anything that I knew was recurring, that captured my attention, a part of the habit, I would write it in the diary. Just little one-liners. And the one-liners was important because what I also wanted to do is I wanted to review that diary every night so that I could become more alert to those habits. And if I had written long paragraphs, right, I wouldn't read it every night. You know, I wouldn't read a long paragraph or a page about every single thing I found. So I wanted like bullet points that would remind me, but then I could read those bullet points at night. And what happened as a result was I became much more alert to the habits that were in my mind at the time. And then when they would start to present themselves again, like, ah, I know you. I recognize you. You know, you're just one of those habits that's getting me to pay attention. And I would lose interest. I would just start to see it as a part of the habit process rather than as a real story, right? So it was a very effective little exercise, at least for me. So if you want to practice this, I assure you, unless you've already gone through something like this, there are habit thoughts that recur in your mind and steal your attention and cause you to believe the ego. Just, you know, get a little notebook or a little diary with a key if that sounds fun to you. It did to me. And little bullet points when you notice, write down what it is. Oh, I see, I'm thinking about this again. You know, it could be anything. You know, it could be, I see I'm thinking about how fat I am again, right? I see I'm worrying about my children again. Or I see I'm trying to control my children's lives again. I daydream about getting another job. I daydream about making more money. You know, what are the recurring things that keep coming up? And just write them down. And then every night review those bullet points. And that will make you much more alert to the habit of these reoccurring thoughts. Therefore, assuming you really want to let go of the habit, you will be much quicker to let go of listening when they appear again. So how does one become alert to the cycle of habit? Keep a journal. And this was just me having fun with it. Buy a diary with a little lock on it if you wish. Let that diary symbolize the secrets you have hidden from yourself. You see, you've hidden the fact that these are just reoccurring habit thoughts. Instead, you see them as serious and meaningful. It's serious and meaningful. Ron and Jasmine are my obstacles. How can I get away from Ron and Jasmine? Oh, I'll move to La Vida and buy a little cabin, right? I really do have to worry about my children. If I don't worry about my children, something may go very, very wrong. Right? We believe it, and that's why it's a secret. We believe we have to think these thoughts. So they're secrets we've hidden from ourselves. So buy a diary with a little lock on it if you wish. Let that diary symbolize the secrets you have hidden from yourself. And then go in search of those secrets with earnestness, which is love and dedication. And when it says go in search of, take those words lightly. Really what that means is pay attention for. At least in my case, I'm not going to find them until they show up, right? So they show up on their own because they're habits, right? They're going to show up. I just have to be willing to notice when it comes up. Ah, look, you know, there I am. You know, trying to control my children's life again, thinking about what I can do to get them to change the way they live their life. There I am doing it again. I know I do this all the time. Let me write that down in my little diary here, because that's one I do all the time. Oh, look, here I am fantasizing about getting another job again. You know, fantasizing about creating my resume. I think about that all the time. Let me write that down. That's one of my habits, right? Thinking about getting another job, right? Just be alert. And when they pop up, you'll recognize them because they are things you think about over and over again, and write them down. Write the secrets as you find them in your diary. Be brief and not long-winded. And again, this is because you want to review it every day. And you don't want to end up with a novel that you have to read every night before you go to bed. You want a bullet list, right? So be brief and not long-winded. Do not worry about dates, since the cycle of habit is often repeated. You don't have to say, on Tuesday I found this, right? You just write them down. But this is important. Be absolutely honest. You know, that's really important. Be absolutely honest with yourself. This says be absolutely honest, since you can lock the diary and hide the key. And then each night, open the diary with your heart and read the secrets you have written there. What are your habits which continuously feed the ego? That's what you're looking for. Your habits that continuously feed the ego. And that is the end, I'm guessing, maybe not. Yep, that is the end of 782C. And so that would take us to 783 with only 6 minutes to go. I would really rather play a song, except I can't. I wonder if it will... Let me try something, because I'd rather not start something new and big. Because I won't be here next week, by the way. Next week, Hal is going to be here during this teaching time. I will be at a self-inquiry retreat. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to quit iTunes and start iTunes again and see if that will enable me to play music, because I'd rather listen to a song. Okay, it says the iTunes volume is currently turned all the way down. Is this the volume? I think I found the trick. I didn't even know iTunes had a volume. Okay, let's see what happens. I bet you I can play a song now. So, here's a song. Since determination is love, here's a song that kind of makes that point. You guys know this song. It's called The Impossible Dream. Hey, look at that. We have music.
To dream the impossible dream, to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go. Unrightable wrong, to love pure and chaste from afar, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star. This is my quest, to follow that star, no matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right. Question of pause, to be willing to march in the light of heavenly cause. And I know in order to be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will be peaceful and calm when I'm late to my rest. And the world
love that song too, Sharon. It gives me chills every time I listen to it. So there we go. Determination is love, right? And what I am going to do now is go ahead and turn the mic over to you, Ken, and I'll be hanging around and listening. So I'll be here with y'all. Bye.
Thank you, Regina.